Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Give it to Hill. Tries to push forward. Can he get in? Touchdown, Wolverine. 13-play drive. Covering 77 yards. Michigan eats up 5 minutes and 46 seconds. Barrett dancing. Barrett runs it. Barrett. First down. Barrett. Touchdown, Ohio State. JT Barrett is putting this offense on his shoulders. And the Buckeyes finally on the board. Barrett to throw it. Barrett, wide open ball, touchdown, Buckeyes. And just like that, Ohio State with an opportunity to level this game at 14. They give it to Higdon. Touchdown, Michigan. Steps up, Barrett scrambles, Barrett runs it himself, and Barrett goes down. That's a 10-yard gain.
Not what Ohio State fans want to see. Barrett reaching down towards that right knee.
Barrett in some pain. Dobbins. Touchdown, Buckeyes. Just like that, a redshirt freshman comes in the game and leads Ohio State into the end zone for 6. At their own 27, play fake. O'Connor throws deep. Intercepted by Ohio State. Jordan Fuller with the ball. And the Buckeyes are out of bounds at midfield. The first turnover of the game. Weber. And Weber picks up the first down. Weber racing to the end zone. Touchdown, Buckeyes. The Buckeyes, winners of 6 in a row. 13 of the last 14.
We play is slumber. Absolutely not. We're playing a good football team. One of the best defenses in America in a home turf. That you go ask those players how they feel about. You know, they gave everything they got. So I disagree with you very vehemently and somewhat pissed. It's not we're playing our off and against a very, very good team. We hung in there for 4 quarters, and that's name a rivalry when it's not like that. Imagine someone on your freaking sideline and now you hurt your quarterback. I'll find out who that was.
So I'm here warming up. There was like a tight spot right here. So this is like a cart, right? Like a red cart. I don't know, one of ours, right? There's a tight spot. It's probably like this, and our bench is over here, and I'm throwing, warming up. I'm going to go throw. Somebody just tried to like squeeze through, I guess, not to get close to our bench, which is fine. I don't really care as long as it don't hit me. And he hit me, and my knee just kind of shifted in. Like I said, just twisted up on me. We was able to lock it out before the game. That's all it was.
You know, I think the hardest part for me is just you come here to win this game, and our senior class wasn't able to do it. And, you know, I hold myself responsible for a lot of that, and it sucks. I can't imagine a worse feeling right now.
Wish we could have won. Wish we could have sent the seniors out with a victory. I know one thing. I mean, they did. They gave everything they had. You know, played extremely hard. Great bunch of guys to coach. Great character guys. Great football character. Great character. Yeah, so it's disappointing.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, yes. Welcome indeed to the extravaganza. Thanks so much for being with us as we get rolling at 11 minutes after 3 o'clock on this Monday. My goodness gracious, what a weekend. Amazing weekend of college football. We had upsets. In fact, one of them we knew we had before we even left for the weekend. On Friday, we found out about Miami going down and losing to Pitt at Pitt. And what kind of an impact that's going to have. How about number one Alabama going down to Auburn? Ohio State did not need to worry about such things. They took care of business as almost everybody expected. Tell me the truth, Jim Cushlin. When the Bucks were down 14-0, were you thinking Michigan win?
Yeah, I was. I was a little bit.
Wow, you guys are so weird. And by you guys, I mean you, since you just admitted that. People on Twitter, Buckeye fans on Twitter and Facebook, Cush, just so ridiculously melodramatic. Even my son came in. He was, I don't know where he was out of the house for the first, most of the first quarter. He came in, looked at the score, 14, Michigan 14, Ohio State nothing, and said, dang, Dad, Michigan about to beat Ohio State. I said, son, you do realize what quarter this is, don't you? There is no way Michigan beats Ohio State here. Number one, Ohio State is a much, much, much deeper and better team. And number two, Michigan has John O'Korn. John O'Korn might just be the worst quarterback in college football history to ever earn scholarships at two different places.
That's true, especially when you put that two different places part in there.
Exactly. I mean, two different schools saw fit to give him college scholarships and make them starters, even for, you know, temporary periods of time. And he is slash was awful. And I cannot overemphasize the word awful enough. I could do that for 30 minutes straight, and it wouldn't be enough to talk about how terrible he was. And so I'm telling people on Twitter and telling people on Facebook, do you realize who this is? Do you know who the Michigan quarterback is? What are you crying about? Ohio State is going to come back and win by 21. Now, they didn't win by 21, so I was wrong in that part. But obviously, I mean, well, let's take a look. Since the point in time, Jim Cushman, when you were worried and you saw 14-0 Michigan and you thought Michigan victory, from that point on, Ohio State 31, Michigan 6, which is exactly what I thought it would be. 31-6 is more than a 21-point victory. So they spotted them the 14 and just kind of were getting there. Their legs under them, and, you know, just different things happen in a game, as we know. And for crying out loud, I mean, I just don't. I even said to people, you know, Ohio State was down bigger to Penn State, and you remember the fourth quarter, right? I mean, and I said, Michigan is no Penn State. What are you worried about? There's no way this Michigan team can keep putting points up to match what Ohio State will do when they start putting points up. And that is exactly what happened. So from that 14-0 point in the game, it was 31-6, Ohio State routing them, blowing them out of the building, bringing more and more questions and more heat down on the wunderkind coach, the coach who was supposed to restore the roar to the Wolverines. Jim Harbaugh now 0-3 against Urban Meyer, 1-2 against Mark D'Antonio and Sparty, and 1-2 against James Franklin and Penn State. Yes, it is as ugly as 2-7 sounds like it would be. And there's just not really a whole heck of a lot that you can point to say, well, that'll change, that'll get better. No. No. Urban keeps out recruiting everybody, including the Wolverines. I mean, look at it this way. JT Barrett went down, as you just heard part of the reason why. His knee was injured in pregame on the sideline. Was it in pregame that was supposed to
happen? Yeah, it was pregame, yep.
Pregame. But he recovers enough to start the game, but then he takes a hit on that knee that had already been damaged by that camera guy or whatever it was pregame, and he gets knocked out. So here comes Dwayne Haskins, the true freshman, right? True freshman, Dwayne Haskins? True freshman, who is better than anybody that has played quarterback for the Wolverines all season. He's better than Wilton Spate. He's better than Brandon Peters. And he could throw left-handed and be better than John O'Korn. Dwayne Haskins took the Buckeyes reins over and never missed a beat. And I'm a Joe Burrow fan, by the way. I really wanted to see Joe Burrow be the guy to back up and then take over for JT Barrett next season. But it looks like it's clearly going to be Dwayne Haskins. Joe Burrow's probably going to request a transfer. That would be my guess.
Yeah, that'd be my guess too now.
Yeah, and why would he not? I mean, he's too good to sit there and just back up the next 3 years, this true freshman. So, you know, he's a redshirt freshman, I think, or is Burrow a sophomore? No, I think he's a redshirt freshman, is he?
I'm going to check now because now I can't remember.
I think he's a redshirt freshman. So, it doesn't matter really because the point is, you know, Dwayne Haskins appears to be the heir apparent to JT Barrett, and how terrific was he? He really, really was. And the Buckeyes are indeed now steamrolling into the Big Ten championship game with all kinds of championship hopes in front of them. If they can upset, well, no, it wouldn't even be an upset. Can't call it an upset because, quite frankly, I don't know what Vegas says. Do you have a line on that game yet on Ohio State and Wisconsin at Lucas Oil Stadium in Indy neutral field. I don't even know what the line is going to be.
I got six. Ohio State right now by 6.5.
Wow, they're laying 6.5 to the undefeated Badgers.
Right.
Wow, I'll take the Badgers and those points, by the way, for recreational purposes only. I would do that. So they're on their way. And this is, you know, the opportunity is there for them, except for the fact, and by the way, there's a ton that we have to kind of navigate our way through here today on this program. I've got so many thoughts I want to share with you, particularly in this first hour, because the second hour is when we have some guests scheduled. We're going to talk to Chris Lauterbach from 11warriors.com. That is a Buckeye-devoted website. It is terrific, and we're going to talk to him about the perspective of Buckeye fans right now going into that Wisconsin game and the championship. So Chris Lauterbach will be from 11warriors.com at 4:10 after the top of the hour. Then at 4:35, we'll talk a little bit of NFL. Scott Petrak, who covers the Cleveland Browns, covered their 11th straight loss, now the second team in franchise or in NFL history, Kush, to start consecutive seasons at 0-11. Again, the only other being the expansion Buccaneers
right
back in 76-77. It has just never been this bad in the history of the National Football League for any of its historical franchises. No one has ever gone a span of 48 games and been 4-44. Each week they lose, they set a new record in futility. And they weren't even competitive, by the way, in my opinion, against Cincinnati. They just weren't. So I have thoughts on that I want to hit. I want to talk about the Jabril Peppers hit, the Michigan star, former Michigan star, who was hit in the fourth quarter with a flag that just made me tweet the words, I hate the National Football League. And you know what? I will speak the words now. I hate the National Football League. The way they are calling games and plays now makes me just say enough is enough. Just kill the beast. Let it die. Let the a-hole protesters continue to kneel for the anthem and drive more and more fans away. Their revenue and their attendance is down so sharply, it is amazing that they continue to allow this. I mean, I am stunned that the owners aren't doing something about it. It's their product. Or that they're not telling Goodell, pass a rule right now that says everybody has to do it. The NFL, there's a report from, it's Clay Travis's site. It's Outkick the Coverage. And I'll have to find the source of his numbers. But the league and its TV partners, CBS, Fox, ESPN, and NBC, have lost already roughly $500 million this year. And there are still 5 weeks of football left. They have lost $500 million this year. Already. Ratings have dropped overall by 20% since 2015, according to the site. And $500 million, that's, in case you're scoring at home and you're looking for another way to phrase that, that's $500 million. Because fans are so disenchanted with so much of what the NFL is doing wrong. The protesting idiots, the NFL officials and their, hey, we're worried about the class action lawsuit filed against us on CTE and head injuries this and head-to-head contact that. They're taking the football out of football. They're taking the hitting out of a contact sport. It's simply ridiculous. The Peppers play yesterday. I want to get into that. Derrick Rose has left the Cavaliers. He is staying in contact with the team, but he is contemplating his future. He may be done playing basketball. And now the question is what is his legacy? Half of the internet, as far as I can tell, is on his side and feeling badly for him. The other half, which is the half upon which I sit, or where I sit, says, get him the hell out of here. I never wanted him with the Cavaliers in the first place. He's a joke. He's a hack. He doesn't have love for the game. He's not dedicated. I argued with Myles Garrett about that on Twitter. That's right. Myles Garrett, the Browns defensive end, the first overall pick in the draft, put together a little tweet of support for D. Rose. People say that because he's a millionaire, he doesn't have anything to worry about, but y'all don't understand. You know, his body let him down, and money doesn't take away your love of the game. He said the words, love of the game. And I had to inform Mr. Garrett, who wasn't, you know, around and probably paying attention to Derrick Rose 2 years ago, when Derrick Rose, then under a contract that paid him $20-some million a year, plus the Adidas $70 to $80 million that he was getting, Derrick Rose announced the reason he skips a lot of games is because he doesn't want his body to be sore when he's in retirement and trying to go to meetings or graduation parties. Kush, do you remember how much time we spent talking about that?
At least about 2 days, to my recollection.
Yeah, yeah. This, and I said to Miles, got love of the game? This cat misses games because he doesn't want to be sore in retirement because of what Rose called something I did before. Like, as if it was just like a passing thing. It's his profession for which he will have earned hundreds of millions of dollars, but I don't want to do enough while I make those hundreds of millions of dollars to make me sore in retirement. I don't want to be sore, you know.
Two notations on this that you did get to, but I feel are just as important to this whole situation. One, the reason he's still contemplating is, it's my understanding, he will lose the Adidas money, which is still a hefty chunk of change.
$70 million, I think, is what he's still owed on.
Yes.
As long as he stays in the league. Right.
Exactly. And number two, regardless of everything else you just said, all true, by the way, here's where it really comes down for me as the clincher.
What?
At this point in time, after watching a couple games now of this, I would rather have Jose Calderon anyway.
I would too.
Yeah, I said that.
I would too. I would take Jose Calderon instead of Derrick Rose in his 25% shooting and his 1.2 assists a game as the point guard, starting in place of Isaiah Thomas. Hell yeah, I would let Calderon start as well.
I feel if it goes this way and Derrick Rose ends up leaving, then I'm fine with Jose as the backup for when Isaiah Thomas comes back. I could care less if I see Derrick Rose again.
I, you know what? I didn't like the idea of bringing him in the first place, which I think I was very clear about.
Yes.
Not a fan of his, not a fan of his attitude, not a fan of his commitment to the game, which, of course, as we're talking about, he does not have. So if he's deciding to cut his losses, it cuts the Cavaliers' losses at the same time. If he feels like he can't play. And by the way, this love of the game guy is drowning himself in sorrow and pity, not over another torn ACL, which he has done before.
Mm-hmm.
But over a sprained ankle.
Yeah.
He's got a sprained ankle. That's it. Sprained ankle. My son sprained his ankle on the first day of high school basketball tryouts this year.
Oh, jeez.
He missed the first, I mean, literally, of tryouts.
Oh,
unfortunately,
man.
He's good. He didn't even need to try out, really, so he made the team. But he missed the first 2 weeks of practice. He missed the first 2 weeks of practice with a sprained ankle. And at no point, as he's wearing that boot and using those crutches during that period of time, did he come to me and say, Dad, I'm contemplating my basketball future. I just don't know. I sprained my ankle, and you know that's just kind of really hard. I mean, come on. You know, Derrick Rose has, can I say this without sounding really, really cruel? I'm going to. Derrick Rose has no heart. He doesn't have heart. And I don't want a guy around me who doesn't have heart. And I don't want a guy around me, quite frankly, who not only does he not have heart, he doesn't have assists. He doesn't share the ball. He doesn't look for other guys to set other guys up. So I want to get into that a little bit more as we go into the next half hour. And also, like I said, about the hit from Peppers. And we'll talk more about the NFL and some of the results yesterday. Last night, Steelers continue to march along. It was a harder game than a lot of people thought it would be. But they're 9-2. Patriots rolled yesterday. They're 9-2. They're on a collision course, those two teams are. As a matter of fact, that collision course happens in 2 weeks, I believe. No, three weeks, technically. Yeah, Steelers have the Bengals this coming week. That's a W. The Ravens after that, probably a W. And then New England. That'll be the showdown for home field advantage in the AFC Championship game and the way things are looking in the AFC. The game of the week, of course, was the Saints and the Rams. And how about Jared Goff out-dueling Drew Brees and getting it done for the Rams? That was something I did not see coming. The Lions have lost ground in the playoff race, by the way, after this weekend's results. We'll have to talk about that. So a lot of those things we still have to get into, including the Jabril Peppers hit that makes me just never want to watch the NFL again because that was ridiculous. So we'll talk about that. We've got a Sports Center coming up here in just a couple. But I want to update this, Jim, just because I was talking about John O'Korn being the worst quarterback ever. This story literally came across my eyes just now. I guess it actually posted yesterday. Did you know that Wilton Spate's done?
No.
At Michigan.
Oh, I did catch that earlier, now that you mention it.
Wilton Spate's football career at Michigan has ended. The fourth-year junior. Team started for parts of the last two seasons, announces plans to spend a fifth season elsewhere via social media. He tweeted, quote, thank you, Michigan. These past 4 years have been nothing short of spectacular. Enrolling in, and then it's got an Instagram link. And let me follow it and see what it says. Oh, it's just a continuation of his tweet. That's all, because it needed more character space. He says, enrolling in January of 2014 as a kid from Virginia, I didn't know what to expect. 4 years later, I leave a Michigan man. The amazing memories with my teammates, playing under the best coaches in America, and enjoying everything that this wonderful university and town had to offer. What a ride. To the fans that stuck with us through thick and thin, thank you. To Coach Hoke for giving a kid with no offers a chance, thank you. To Coach Harbaugh for coming in and making me a better man and a better quarterback. For understanding this decision of mine and always having my back no matter what, thank you. I don't know where next will be, and I'll use these next 4 weeks to figure it out. I'm excited to keep pursuing my dreams in a New Jersey, but will forever root for the boys wearing the winged helmet. Go Blue. So there you go, Wilton Spate. How about that? That kind of thins the herd a little bit for next year. Brandon Peters, Dylan McCaffrey, next man up.
Yep.
And that's pretty much what it's going to come down to. Malzone, I don't think, has a chance. He's a junior. He's never been considered in one of the starting quarterback battles, as we know. So it thins the herd a little bit to two five-star quarterbacks. Brandon Peters, who, of course, ended up taking over a little bit this year after John O'Korn had his first disastrous run as a starter. And then, of course, got knocked out with a concussion, and that's why he did not play against the Buckeyes. And the guy who might have the most raw talent of any of them, Dylan McCaffrey, who's just a flat-out freaky athlete in much the same way that his brother is, except he's a passer. So Dylan McCaffrey, he's a true freshman right now. Of course, he'll have 4 years of eligibility left, and Peters three. So it looks like those will be the two top names going into the spring for Jim Harbaugh. So that's kind of interesting. So, okay, so a lot of ground to cover here. I want to get into the – oh, and by the way, Kush, as long as we're doing this, real quick, thoughts and I don't want to say condolences. That's the wrong word. Nobody died. But just, you know, best wishes to a group of great young men at Central Catholic High who fell on their road to what they hoped would be yet another state championship game appearance. The battle against Trotwood Madison, as you know, was going to be tough. We talked to Bill Clark about that on Friday. It was every bit, you know, a lot of contempt. As you said, Jim, familiarity breeds contempt. Those two teams playing each other in the playoffs again. Trotwood top ranked in the state. They got the win. Central kind of gave some points away, and I know they wish they had those plays back, but just felt really, really bad for those kids, particularly those seniors who wanted one more crack at this. But an amazing season, an amazing run, amazing career for those seniors.
Yes.
And, well, quite frankly, for the juniors, too. If they've been around over these last 3 years, it's been something special. And so their season has come to an end. Just going back to Friday night, I wanted to kind of throw that out there.
Absolutely. Real quick, then, I'll give a quick programming update, though.
Sure.
Later on in the week, on Friday afternoon, the one team, there is still one team from Northwest Ohio that will be playing for a state title game, Eastwood. They're undefeated still. They won back on Friday night. Friday afternoon, they'll take on Wheelersburg and another undefeated for a state title game. We're going to have coverage of that game over on Talk Radio 100.7 coming up later this week.
Love it. Love it. I think that's outstanding. That's great. We'll get those young men up and on the radio. All right. It is 3:31. Let's get wild.
ESPN 106.5 The Ticket presents the Wild Stat of the Day, brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
All right, despite all of the craziness on the college gridiron this weekend, the Wild Stat comes from college basketball. At the Barclays Center in Brooklyn Saturday afternoon, Alabama-Minnesota playing in the Barclays Classic Championship game when a second-half on-court brawl broke out. As a result of the brawl, Alabama had their entire bench ejected from the game for entering the court during the scuffle. You know those rules. Which means Alabama was down to the five players that were on the court that weren't on the bench to break the rule. So they got five to play the entire second half with. But then after the scuffle, an Alabama player fouled out, which left them with four against five. But then another Bama player was injured and had to go to the bench and sit there for the rest of the game, which means they finished the game for the final 11-plus minutes, 3-on-5. And if you're wondering how bad they got blown out, keep on wondering, because they didn't. Minnesota eventually beat the shorthanded Crimson Tide 89-84. Alabama outscored the Golden Gophers while shorthanded, 30-22. And they got the game within to within 3 points with a minute to go before the Golden Gophers hung on for the win. How about that? Alabama, and I can't remember his name, but one of the three who stayed on the court, Cush, just went crazy.
Yeah.
He was filling it up from everywhere. They couldn't guard him. Even with 5-on-3, they could afford to double him.
He scored 40, I think, in this one.
Yeah, and I don't remember his name, and I should get it for him. But that's the crazy stat. A 5-on-3 game, the team with only three only lost 89-84.
I love how they got it to within 3 points with under a minute. I mean, how does that even happen when you literally have a two-man hockey-style advantage? How does that even happen?
How is there not somebody open for a layup down on the Minnesota side every possession? Every possession. And if they're playing a three-man zone, which I probably would do if it's, 5-on-3, I'd have a guy kind of at the point around the foul line area, and I'd have two guys down low and say, shoot outside and beat us from out there. And that's probably what happened. And Minnesota didn't shoot very well and allowed Alabama to stay in that game when they did have a red-hot shooter, as you pointed out, who had 40. So that is a wild stat indeed. It's your Buffalo Wild Wings wild stat of the day. It's 3:33. Let's get about into the hour. Sports Center, want to come back. Your thoughts on what you saw on Saturday? Should the Ohio State Buckeyes be considered a favorite to make the Final Four now? I will tell you this. Auburn beating Alabama did not help the Buckeyes. It did not help the Buckeyes. If you think number one falling and number two falling is a good thing, think again. Yes, the Miami loss could certainly be an assist, but the Alabama loss does not help Ohio State at all. I'll explain and get your thoughts on it at 866-240-1065 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Part of the extravaganza right now by calling 866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France extravaganza on 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, buddy. We are rolling along. Thanks for being a part of the show today. 866-240-1065. Let's hit this just for a moment or two before we go to Chris Lauterbach, who will be joining us from 11warriors.com in about a half an hour. And we'll talk to him about Ohio State's playoff chances, and we'll talk to him about what we saw as the Buckeyes took down the Wolverines. What is it, Jim, 12th out of 13 or 13 out of 14?
13 out of 14.
13 out of 14 and 5 in a row, I think it is?
Six.
Six in a row. That's the longest streak the Buckeyes have ever had in this series, in this long and historic, storied rivalry. That's saying something. And that's, of course, what Jim Harbaugh was brought here to stop. How about that? Three of the six have come against Harbaugh. 13 out of the 14, well, 3 out of the 13 have been Jim Harbaugh's now without a W to counter that. So that's pretty troubling for Michigan. And a lot of this, of course, I think you played John O'Korn. Well, we'll get to that. Like I said, talk about that a little bit more coming up with Chris at about 4:10. But I mentioned when we're talking about the playoff race, Cush, about the fact that Auburn did Ohio State no favors whatsoever. And this might not be some big startling revelation. I'm sure it's not, because you're smart. If you listen to this show, you're smart. Only smart people listen to this show. Dumb A's can find other shows to listen to. There are plenty of them out there. Smart people listen here. And you know this, but let's put it into words anyway. Alabama needed to win that football game for Ohio State, in my estimation, to have a chance. I do not see in any way, shape, or form Jim Cushlin, the committee, keeping two-loss teams for the Final Four in the playoffs. So far, this is the fourth year for it. They have never had one two-loss team qualify by the committee as a playoff participant. The idea that they would put two in, I think, is a stretch to say the very least. And now, Auburn is in the driver's seat to be the 1-2-loss team to make it. Now, the SEC championship game is all set up. Auburn, which has two losses, takes on Georgia, which has just one loss. And guess what? Auburn just beat Georgia, what, 3 weeks ago? 4 weeks ago? However long it was?
Yeah, about 4 weeks ago, and they smoked them.
When Georgia was number one.
Right.
By the by. When Georgia was number one, Auburn took them apart. And I believe it was like 40-17, somewhere in that neighborhood. I don't have the score memorized, but it was somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yep, 40-17. You got it right.
All right, very good. So some of these I do have memorized, didn't even know it. But point being, Auburn is in position to do it again. If they take down Georgia, they are in as a two-loss conference champion. If Clemson, which is now the new number one, a one-loss team, beats Miami, which I believe they will. Miami was exposed somewhat, I think, against Pittsburgh. They are in. That's a one-loss team that's in. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Oklahoma controls its destiny. They have a conference championship game, albeit a unique kind. It's more of a round-robin kind, basically. Whoever finished in the top two play each other. They don't have, you know, split divisions there in the Big 12. But Oklahoma just took apart TCU big, very similar to what Auburn did to Georgia, if memory serves. It was like 40-something to 10. And again, you have to remind me of that, because I don't have that one memorized either. What did Oklahoma beat TCU by? Never mind. I found it. It's 38 to 20. So they beat them by 18. That's not close. So if Oklahoma does what Oklahoma should do, which is beat TCU again, they're in. Clemson beats Miami, they're in. Auburn beats Georgia in the SEC, which a championship game, which, again, based on previous results, they should do. They're in.
Hey, quick question, if I may. If reversed, if Georgia beats Auburn, is Georgia in?
Hold on. Let me finish my thought on this one first, because we can talk about those. Okay, now what if in the unlikely scenario Georgia wins? What if the unlikely scenario TCU wins? See, these are things that would have to be really remarkable turnarounds given their previous meetings just within the last month.
I follow what you're saying. Okay,
but so this is just how the favorites for each of these games will be. As I said, Auburn over Georgia. It certainly will be Oklahoma over TCU. It certainly will be Clemson, now that Miami has lost, Clemson over the Hurricanes. And then, of course, so those three would all be in those circumstances. And then it's up to the conference, or excuse me, to the committee to decide what do they value more. If Ohio State, well, obviously, if Wisconsin wins, they're the 14. There you go. It's it. That's it. They're done. They're undefeated. Big Ten champions, they're in. But if Ohio State wraps up its season with wins over Michigan State, and this is large because Michigan State at the time was 13th. This is after the Iowa debacle. If they wrap up their season with win over Michigan State in dominating fashion, 48-3, then Illinois, which is they should have dominated and did, and then with a relatively dominant performance against Michigan, remember they fell behind 14-0, almost like spotting them, kind of chuckling, saying, yeah, you guys think that's fun? Here we go, 31-6 later, bang, game over, season over for the Wolverines, essentially. But anyway, and then beat unbeaten Wisconsin. They and a lot of Buckeye supporters are going to be screaming, we belong in that Final Four spot, in that fourth spot. We are the Big Ten champions, and we just beat an undefeated team. Nobody playing better than us right now. Would the committee agree with that and put a second two-loss team into the playoff? Or would they look at one-loss Alabama, who has been either number one or number two every week of this season, and whose only loss will have been to Auburn in a rivalry game, and Auburn was ranked number six, and it was a good game. Wasn't a blowout by any stretch.
And for Alabama, it was a road game.
Oh, right, thank you, at Auburn. The committee could not possibly pass up Bama under those circumstances for Ohio State. Could they? Could they choose a two-loss team with a 31-point blowout loss at unranked Iowa and a 15-point loss at home to Oklahoma over a one-loss team whose only loss was on the road at number six Auburn? Not in a million years, as far as I'm concerned. Because the job of the committee is to do what? Find the four best teams. And best can mean best from the beginning of the season to the end in terms of the body of work. Or a committee member might vote best right now. Who's playing the best right now despite previous losses? And ultimately, Jim, that's what the committee is going to have to figure out. And it might not be as a committee. As we know, every committee member is individually able to choose whatever they want. Their criteria is their own. One committee member might believe it's totally about conference championships. Ohio State won the Big Ten and beat Wisconsin. They're in. No way we leave the Big Ten champion out. Can't do it. That's just my belief. But the guy sitting next to him might be like, yeah, but that Big Ten champion did not have one of the top four seasons in college football this year. Because early in the season, the blowout loss, well, blowout by two touchdowns to Oklahoma at home. And then late in the season, the blowout loss to Iowa. 31 points. That isn't one of the four best seasons that has happened. We should vote for the four best seasons. And clearly Alabama's one-loss season, especially given the loss and to whom it was against, and how and where, et cetera, that one loss gives them a much better season. And so that's the key here. How many individual committee members, and by the way, of course, all of this changes, Jim Cushlin, as you said, if upsets happen in the conference championship games.
Right.
If Georgia takes down Auburn, now we have a whole new story. 12-1 Georgia, they would be 12-1 with that win over, and they would be the SEC champion. Of course they would be in. 12-1 Georgia would be in. There's no two ways about that. The question would be, now that Auburn has been defeated, they would have three losses. They'd be out clearly. But would the defeat of Auburn at the hands of Georgia weaken Alabama's case a little bit because the team that beat them just lost to Georgia? So the Alabama one loss might look a little bit nastier now than it did before. And what if Miami beats Clemson? What if Miami takes down Clemson in the ACC championship game? Clemson is sitting here with just one loss. They've been one of the top two or three teams in the entire country all season long. If they lose, if Clemson loses to one loss Miami, is Miami still in after losing to Pittsburgh? Yeah, probably. What about Clemson? Now, they're a two-loss team. Whose two losses look worse? Clemson's or Ohio State's? Clemson's will have been to Syracuse 27-24 unranked, yes, but a field goal game. Ohio State's unranked loss was by 31 points. Maybe it matters how they would lose to Miami in such a given situation. And then, to really throw a monkey wrench into all of this, Cush, because I seem to be the only person really talking about this. I haven't really heard too many national talking heads bringing this up. But what about USC? If USC takes down Stanford, which is ranked 21st in the Pac-12 championship game, they will be an 11-2 team, which has played a tougher schedule than Ohio State's 11-2 team. And by the way, Stanford is no joke either, because Stanford just beat Notre Dame badly. And Notre Dame, up until 2-3 weeks ago, was considered to be one of the top 5 or 6 teams in the country.
Yeah.
So Stanford is not a joke. They're on the verge of a double-digit win season. They're 9-3. And so if USC takes down a 9-win Stanford team in the Pac-12 championship game and ends up 11-2, you can make a legitimate argument that that two-loss team has every bit as much right to be there as the Buckeye two-loss team does. So the upset factor in any one or multiple situations, Jim, I'm just going to say it. I don't think the Buckeyes can make the postseason. Well, let me rephrase. Of course, they're going to play a bowl game. I don't think the Buckeyes can make the Final Four. I can't see the committee in all of those circumstances I just laid out saying your loss to Oklahoma is forgiven and your 31-point loss to Iowa is forgiven. Your two losses are going to trump Alabama's one loss or Miami's one loss or Clemson's two losses or USC's two losses or Georgia's one loss or Auburn's two losses. All of those things, every team that I just mentioned,
yeah,
in my opinion, and I'm trying, you know, I don't ever try to be a homer. I know I can be from time to time here, and I'm not trying to obviously overdo it and just, you know, crush the Big Ten right now or the Buckeyes. But every one of those teams I just mentioned has a better case for making the Final Four than Ohio State does, even in the upset scenarios. There are four better cases that can be made than the Buckeyes case. That's just what I'm seeing here. All right, there's a lot of people on hold, and I'm sorry for the long monologue. It's just a lot to digest and a lot of if that, then this.
To me, the moral...
If this, then that to deal with here. So,
real quick, to me, the moral of the story, if you're a Buckeye fan, you better hope a majority of the committee puts a ton of weight on conference championships. That's really the only possible shot.
Which would fly in the face of last year.
I know. I'm just
but
saying.
As I pointed out to you and to Paul Keels and a couple of other people, the committee doesn't stay the same every year. There are new faces on it every year.
Right.
So this year's committee might put more stock in the conference championship than last year's committee. But to me, I don't I don't like that. What I want a committee to do, if we must do this by only four teams, I want the committee to say to themselves, here is our task. Which four teams had the best seasons? Which four teams had the best seasons? Because that's who you reward with a spot in the playoffs. Not who's the hottest right now and on a roll. Not I guess I'll stop there. Just best seasons. Because now I have to consider, how did Alabama lose and when? How did Ohio State lose and when? How did Oklahoma have their one loss and when? How did Wisconsin's Wisconsin doesn't have any right now. How did Clemson lose and when? And how did they respond to that? I want the best season from then to now, from game one to right now. That's, to me, the four teams that should be in. And if you find the four teams that have the four best seasons, guess what? Conference championships are essentially eliminated from the discussion, because your conference championship might have come because you got the right win at the right time, not because you had the best season. Jimmy's in Toledo. Jimmy, go ahead, man. You're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. What's up?
Hey, actually, I didn't even call about that, but listening to all the rabbit holes you were going down, I got two words for you when you talk about this interesting concept, this nebulous concept called best season.
Yeah.
How about after next week when Central Florida's 12-0? The last time I checked, they were FBS school, and 12-0 being in the middle of Florida and having all that speed, I bet they could probably put a real butt kicking on Iowa. And if Ohio State, and I'm a Buckeye honk, and I think everybody knows where I stand on the Buckeyes.
Of course.
They shouldn't be in consideration for a, because if you're a Buckeye fan, and if you're a fan of the integrity of the sport, they don't deserve to be there. Because you lose the 31 points to Iowa, you need to not have anything to do with that championship, or it's a fraud. I'm going to tell you something. I'm rooting for chaos, because I want an 18 playoff, because this is the perfect year where 1 through 8 could legitimately, you could have the 18 be as good as the 1 team this year. And it's not always
right.
The case. It's not always the case, but this is the perfect year for that argument, because truthfully, there isn't a dominant team this year.
You would have
there isn't.
Over,
and before,
you could very easily have an 8-1 and a 7-2 and a 6-3, which, you know, we always have fun with in March, of course, with March Madness. You very well could have that happen this year, and you're right, not always. To your point, and I believe it was tongue-in-cheek about UCF, and thank you, Jimmy.
No, it's not. They deserve to be considered.
No, they deserve to be
considered.
Let's
make another division and then call it something else, because this isn't right either.
Yeah, well, I'm going to disagree. I think it is.
I remember when Boise State couldn't beat anybody, and they put one on Oklahoma in the Fiesta Bowl.
And they, okay? In fact, they did something like that in back-to-back years, but that's just bowl games. To be
they
one
have
of the
to have
final
the opportunity,
four, Jimmy,
too.
To be one
they
of
have
the final,
to have the opportunity.
I know, but to be one of the final four, like I said, you have to have had one of the four best seasons, and I couldn't if I was
What if nobody will play you? Do you think anybody wants to play UCF? If you don't get, you can only make the get. You only get an opportunity to play the big boys if they let you. So the system's closed out.
I'm not going to make that claim.
Come on,
I don't think you can either without having pre-existing knowledge of negotiations with bigger schools. Did they try to schedule?
Oh, come on.
Did they try to schedule SEC?
Come on.
I don't know
they had, just for the record, guys, they had Georgia Tech for what it's worth as the only power conference school out of conference, but that game got canceled because of all those hurricanes.
But if your schedule consists, and Jimmy, I got to run, brother. Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
If your schedule consists of FIU and just, and I'm not trying to diss any of these, by the way, and Maine and ECU and Austin Peay and, you know, UConn and Temple. I mean, I understand they have to play the teams in their conference, of course. But if that's all you got, I mean, the one Big Ten team they did schedule, Jim, was Maryland. Right? They played Maryland. And they beat Maryland 38-10, and that's a Big Ten team. But you know what? That's the bottom of the Big Ten. That's not scheduling Wisconsin. That's not scheduling Penn State. That's, you know, they played Cincinnati, which is fine. But you know what? Let's talk a little bit more about teams that, if you want to play a team from Ohio, schedule the Buckeyes once in a while. Schedule, you know, Michigan State instead of, you know, scheduling SMU or is SMU in their conference?
SMU's in their conference.
That is a conference. So I'm trying to figure out which conference games are which and which ones are non-conference games. So the point is, God bless UCF. You know, here living in Toledo, Ohio, you know, the Rockets, if they would have gone undefeated, just as UCF did, would we be calling for the Rockets to be in the Final Four? There might be some diehards screaming that, yeah, but legitimately, as much as we love UT and BG and everybody in our area, but could a team that went undefeated against Elon, Nevada, Tulsa, and then all of the MAC schools, could that be really? And they did play Miami, by the way. They scheduled the Hurricanes. That's a challenge, and they took some money for it, of course, and they got rolled. But, you know, if they went undefeated, would they be in the Final Four? No, I don't think so. I'm trying to be realistic about this. And I am looking at Power Five and top-rate independents. And, yes, I'm looking at conference champions and runners-up as well. Terry is in Sylvania. Terry, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead, Terry. What you got?
Hey, I want to make one comment about the Ohio State-Michigan game.
Sure.
Michigan quarterback situation's been a mess all year. Started when he threw. It's been a mess, and that's the thing. And so, and I see Speed transfers, and he's out, and it'll be between McCaffrey and Peters. Between McCaffrey and Peters.
Correct.
And Harbaugh is going to be under a little pressure, but I still, you know, I still have faith in it.
Well, I'll tell you what, either McCaffrey or Peters better be as good as or better than Dwayne Haskins, or the beatings are going to continue because the Buckeyes seem to have found themselves the heir apparent to JT Barrett, and he looks like a flat stud.
And then we talk about the chance. If the Buckeyes got in, they got two perfect revenge games. Okay. Clemson, the way they got stomped on last year.
And then Oklahoma this year.
Yeah, and Oklahoma and Baker Mayfield.
Yep.
That would be prime time, that game.
It would
game.
Be fun to see, but the question is, would they deserve it if they got there? And I don't know that at this point in time. Now, if they go out there and roll, Wisconsin 56-7, I might have a very different thing to say about this. But for now, there are two losses on that resume that I cannot overlook.
What is Urban Meyer crying about the photographer? About.
Well, you know, I think, you know, Terry, and I thanks for the call. I got to move on. I think he's just frustrated with the situation. He knows nobody did it on purpose. Even JT explained it and stood up at the press conference and actually acted it out for the media there. He said somebody tried to squeeze between him and the bench or him and some other object there. And as he tried to squeeze between him, the camera, you know, hit his knee. And it made a buckle. It's a clear accident. It's the kind of thing that shouldn't happen, but it's the kind of thing that could happen and did happen. And Urban's frustrated. I get it. That's why he's angry. But I bet in his calmer moments he's thinking to himself, you know what, it's just bad luck, that kind of thing. Just what are you going to do? Joe in Grand Rapids. Real quick, Joe, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I'm a Buckeye fan through and through, and I have to agree with you wholeheartedly. If the conversation is Alabama or Ohio State, and I know there's many other factors, many other teams, but if you've got to pick between those two, I've got to take Alabama. I've got to say that they probably deserve it more. The case you laid out as to the two losses Ohio State has, especially the Iowa loss versus the one loss Alabama has,
right?
I can't get past that. Even if I go with the who have you beat conversation, which Ohio State doesn't have a top five team that they've beat, unless they beat Wisconsin, but they've also beat Michigan State. And
Michigan State was
Michigan.
13 when they beat them. Penn State was top five. Or no, they were like seven.
They were. Penn State was top two, absolutely. I forgot about that.
They were top two. Okay, so they did have that comeback. But the thing is, this is the way I look at it, and you're a smart guy, by the way, because you're a Buckeye fan through and through, but you're also realistic and honest about this. And here's the thing that I think you would appreciate as a smart guy. If the shoe were on the other foot and Alabama was a two-loss team and had lost by two touchdowns at home in Tuscaloosa to a top team like Oklahoma and had lost by 31 on the road at an unranked team, and you're the Buckeyes sitting here with just one loss to the number six team in the country in a rivalry game, what would Buckeye fans be screaming right now? No way Alabama gets in over us. That's highway robbery if they did that, and that's why we got to look at it through that lens and realize that's what you have to say this time around. You can't do that to Alabama.
Absolutely. I think the Buckeyes' best shot to get in, I'm not saying it's impossible. I don't think they get in. But if they're going to get in, I think TCU has to beat Oklahoma and open up another spot because they're not going to put TCU in.
No, they're not. you're 100% right. The question becomes, though, is, you know, what if, you know, what if it's one-loss Georgia? If Georgia wins the SEC championship game against Auburn and they're a one-loss team and now Alabama, now you could, would they go with two SEC teams over the Big Ten champion in that circumstance if Oklahoma took a tumble? That's a really interesting question. One that we'll ponder, but I've got to run right now, my friend.
Even if they did take the two SEC teams, that leaves the winner of Clemson-Miami for the third spot and Ohio State for the fourth.
What am I missing here? I feel like I'm missing one of them. Which, again, I got to run. I mean, my brain is on overload because I got to get to this break. Joe, thanks for the call. It had a lot to chew on there. And you know what? We'll kick this around a little bit more here in just a couple of minutes after the top of the hour Sports Center, because Chris Lauterbach of 11Warriors.com is our next guest right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
We are ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, WTOD-FM Delta Toledo, a Cumulus station.
You're right now, traffic. We have an accident at Wallbridge and Broadway. Also, Monroe Street just past the mall. There's an accident there, Airport and Burn as well in South Toledo. And that's your right now traffic.
All right, so you got hockey on your phone. You're watching basketball on your tablet, and you're trying to watch football on your TV, and you're going to go cross-eyed, and you're going to get a stiff neck. Stop settling for bad times at home trying to watch all the games, and get out and watch them on all the big, beautiful screens all side-by-side in front of you at Buffalo Wild Wings. And while you're there, you can also choose from over a dozen draft beers on tap, 21 signature sauces and seasonings, and your favorite seat. That's all at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports.
They give it to Hill. Tries to push forward. Can he get in? Touchdown, Wolverine. 13-play drive. Covering 77 yards. Michigan eats up 5 minutes and 46 seconds. Barrett dancing. Barrett runs it. Barrett first down. Barrett, touchdown, Ohio State. JT Barrett is putting this offense on his shoulders. And the Buckeyes finally on the board. Barrett to throw it. Barrett, wide open ball, touchdown, Buckeyes! And just like that, Ohio State with an opportunity to level this game at 14. They give it to Higdon. Touchdown, Michigan. Steps up. Scrambles. Barrett runs it himself. And Barrett goes down. That's a 10-yard gain.
Not what Ohio State fans want to see. Barrett reaching down towards that right knee.
Barrett in some pain. Dobbins. Touchdown, Buckeyes. Just like that, a redshirt freshman comes in the game and leads Ohio State into the end zone for 6 at their own 27. Play fake. O'Connor goes deep. Intercepted by Ohio State. Jordan Fuller with the ball. And the Buckeyes are out of bounds at midfield. The first turnover of the game. Weber. And Weber picks up a first down. Weber racing to the end zone. Touchdown, Buckeyes. The Buckeyes, winners of 6 in a row. 13 of the last 14.
We play is slumber. Absolutely not. We're playing a good football team. One of the best defenses in America in a home turf that you go ask those players how they feel about. You know, they gave everything they got. So I disagree with you very vehemently and somewhat pissed. It's not us. We're playing our ass off and against a very, very good team. We hung in there for 4 quarters, and that's name a rivalry when it's not like that. Imagine someone on your freaking sideline, and now you hurt your quarterback. I'll find out who that was.
So I'm here warming up. There was like a tight spot right here. So this is like a cart, right? Like a red cart, I don't know, one of ours, right? It was a tight spot. It's probably like this. And our bench is over here. And I'm throwing, warming up. Well, I'm going to go throw. Somebody just tried to like squeeze through, I guess, not to get close to our bench, which is, you know, fine. I don't really care as long as you don't hit me. And he hit me. And my knee just kind of shifted in. Like I said, just twisted up on me. We was able to lock it out before the game. That's all it was.
You know, I think the hardest part for me is just you come here to win this game, and our senior class wasn't able to do it. And, you know, I hold myself responsible for a lot of that, and it sucks. I can't imagine a worse feeling right now.
Wish we could have won. Wish we could have sent the seniors out with a victory. I know one thing. I mean, they did. They gave everything they had. You know, played extremely hard. Great bunch of guys to coach, great character guys, great football character, great character. Yeah, so it's disappointing.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling Along Are We, a nice montage put together there of the Ohio State-Michigan game. The Buckeyes continuing their dominance in the rivalry that really isn't much of a rivalry, at least at this point in time. I said it on Friday, and I'll say it again now. The Buckeyes have a rivalry with the Wolverines like a hammer has a rivalry with a nail. It just isn't going to be a close fight. Perhaps like a windshield has a rivalry with the mosquito. Yeah, not going to be very close. This is just the way that it is. 13 out of 14 and 6 in a row, that's insane. But that's the run that the Buckeyes are on. And John O'Connor's right when he said this sucks. If he's referring to this as himself, because John O'Connor just absolutely is terrible. And I'm going to say that, by the way, with an apology and an asterisk, because I've always said this. In fact, last week when I found out that O'Connor was going to start for the Wolverines against the Buckeyes, it just furthered, you know, cemented the notion that the Buckeyes were going to win yet again. I don't like to speak ill of college students because they're college kids. Even if he is a fifth-year senior and he's 23 years old, and we rip 19-year-old NBA players, but just because they're not getting paid to do this, they're in college, I feel like I probably shouldn't, you know, necessarily come down as hard on them as I would on a pro player. But my God, does O'Korn look awful. He has all season long, came into the game Saturday with 5 picks and 1 touchdown, averaging, I don't know, 0.3 yards per attempt. just awful. And sure enough, there was no way that the Wolverines were going to handle the Buckeyes for 4 quarters with John O'Connor quarterback. All right, that's enough of that. Let's find out what Chris Lauterbach thinks now. As promised, Chris is, of course, with 11warriors.com, an outstanding Buckeyes website. Chris, thanks for the time, man. How are you?
Absolutely doing well. How are you today?
I'm good, brother. Is it still a rivalry when one team dominates another one for as long? We're talking about a decade plus now, almost a decade and a half. Put it to you this way. I've got a 14-year-old son, and in my son's lifetime, he's only seen Michigan beat Ohio State once. Is that still a rivalry?
Yeah, that's good living for your son. Yeah, I think it's still a rivalry. Obviously, a little bit of the shine gets taken off of it. I think, what, Ohio State's 15-2 since Tressel got here and made the proclamation at halftime of the basketball game and altered the trajectory of the rivalry. But as someone who cut my teeth on the rivalry and, you know, in the John Cooper era, to me it will always be a rivalry, and we're still just getting payback for what we went through with 2-10-1 when Coop was here. So, yeah, I mean, to me it's still the best rivalry in sports. I mean, as I watch every game, you know, as intently as the next person, it's still, no matter the records, this is the one that I'm most thankful starts at noon, so you don't have to anticipate all day long, you know, what is always the game.
Oh, yeah, I love it. I love the noon start, too. I've never liked it when they push it back. This is the way it's supposed to be. I've got 3 phases that I want to talk to you about, Chris. The second 2 phases are the aftermath of this win and what it means to the playoff run. The third phase will be the specific Big Ten championship game and how the Buckeyes match up with the Badgers. As you understand, the Badgers, probably not having seen too much of them already. But I want to start with just the game itself. What was the most impressive thing to you about this win for Ohio State? What did they do right? What was the best part of the game for you? And then what was the thing that had you scratching your head and going, man, I don't understand why this is still broken as far as the outcome of the Michigan game?
Yeah, I think the best thing, obviously Haskins coming in and playing well when Barrett went down, was certainly crucial, and that's always going to grab most of the headlines because it's the quarterback position. But I thought what really helped set up the offense and turn the tide was when the run defense in the second half really firmed up. It's not like Michigan ran the ball up and down the field in the first half because they didn't, but in the second half, I think they ran it 17 times for 1 yard per carry. And I think that really, you know, kind of changed things around. Hubbard really got going in the second half. He had a great game in totality, but really in the second half. And I think Ohio State had the second most tackles for loss they've had all season. So I think, you know, as they really pin their ears back because O'Korn, as you mentioned, you know, before I hopped on, is obviously just, you know, a terrible college quarterback. Ohio State was able to exploit that. That helped, you know, kind of stem the tide after Michigan went up 20-14 midway through the third quarter. I thought the defense really locked down. So I thought that was the best thing, because it helped provide some short fields for an offense that was kind of, you know, partly sputtering and partly going against what just is a, you know, a pretty good Michigan defense. Man, the worst Not really sure. I thought early on, you know, it was what we've seen before from the play calling where we simply just allow teams to take our two best weapons out of the game entirely, which is Weber and Dobbins, especially Weber, the way he's come on, looking fully healthy the last few weeks. So I thought, you know, we really just kept trying to do, you know, Ohio State was kept trying to do the same things and, you know, wasn't really working. So failing to get, you know, maybe try a swing pass or something like that. I get not just slamming Dobbins and Weber into a brick wall when Michigan is stacking the box, but there still should be other ways that you can get those guys the ball. And the failure to do that early, as we've seen often this year when the offense struggles, was just a little frustrating, I think, for Buckeye fans.
Which quarterback was most responsible for the Buckeyes' win, JT Barrett, Dwayne Haskins, or John O'Korn?
I don't know. I think I'd probably go O'Korn on that. I mean, it's just such an easy offense to defend. As long as you can, you know, match up with them physically in the trenches, there's not a whole lot they can do. I mean, if you remember, and I'm sure you do, in the first half, they could have had, I mean, there was at least one touchdown in the end zone where Baker and Arnett, I believe it was, kind of maybe miscommunicated. I think it ended up ultimately being Arnett's man when the guy came out of the slot on the wheel route. I think Baker was handing off Arnett, but there really was no handoff as that guy was wide open. That was a miss. And, you know, there were a couple third down passes, too, that O'Korn just threw to nobody. I mean, guys were wide open and just misfired. So I think I'd have to give the most quarterbacking credit to O'Korn for Ohio State's win.
How enthusiastic are you for Dwayne Haskins to take over this team next year as the heir apparent? And second of all, do you expect Joe Burrow will transfer now?
Well, I think the first one with Burrow, I don't think that he will.
Really?
You know, depending on who you listen to behind the scenes, I mean, we've definitely heard things here and there, but I don't know. I just, something tells me he will stay. I mean, you're always just one play away. So, you know, we'll see. That's just my gut. There's really nothing behind that other than my gut. As far as Haskins, yeah, definitely excited. I mean, I've been a JT apologist for years because I've always felt he has given Ohio State the best chance to win. Maybe not the best chance to look sexy all the time, but the best chance to win. And I still think that's true, but absolutely, you know, Haskins gives you that ability to stretch the field. You know, safeties can't crowd the line as easily or won't crowd the line as easily, probably for very long when he's doing, you know, when he's doing his thing. I mean, that pass to Mac, was a pass that I'm not sure that, JT would attempt. And part of that's a good thing, right? Because that was 2 inches away from probably being an interception. But the fact of the matter is he had enough arm strength to put it through that window for what was arguably the biggest play of the year so far for Iowa State.
We're talking to Chris Lauterbach, 11warriors.com, about the Buckeyes' win over Michigan. And now let's look forward a little bit. In fact, let's go a little bit different order before we talk about playoffs. You got to get by Wisconsin. So let's analyze that matchup. The Badgers have been criticized all season long for not having very many quality wins, even though they have all wins. You know, it's not their fault. The schedule is what the schedule is. Big Ten teams that they play on their half. We all know that the West is the weakest half of the Big Ten. And they just don't have a lot of tough opponents on there. So they've rolled everybody, essentially. They took Michigan down pretty easily. They took Minnesota down pretty easily. And they're undefeated coming into this game. How do you see the matchup between these two teams?
I think like a lot of college football games, it's probably going to come down who can win the trenches. Obviously, Wisconsin, I think their line averages, or I think maybe their lightest guy is 315 pounds, but a huge offensive line with a great tailback. Taylor's, what, 1,800 yards? I think he went over 1,800 yards in their last game for this season. So, you know, they're not going to be real tricky. They're going to try to run it right at you and do some play action with Hornibrook because he's not a great, you know, certainly not a great thrower. Has a lot of experience, but not a great passer. I think what should worry Buckeye fans a little bit is that, you know, Wisconsin's that typical, you know, I-formation team that if they can get going downhill a little bit, and your linebackers or your safeties cheat up and bite on play action like we've seen Ohio State linebackers and safeties do at times this year. Wisconsin can exploit you with the tight end. They might have the best tight end in the country, but certainly in the Big Ten. So it's going to be up to Ohio State to maybe cure some things that have ailed them in losses earlier this year to Oklahoma and Iowa where the tight ends played, you know, pretty big factors. So I think, you know, if you're just thinking about Ohio State's defense versus Wisconsin's offense, that's one thing I'd be paying attention to if I was a Buckeye fan.
Chris Lauterbach joining us from 11warriors.com, talking about the Wisconsin Badgers and Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game. So if you had to make a call, what's your call here? What's your gut tell you as far as who's going to win this thing at Lucas Oil?
I really do see this as a total toss-up. Certainly you highlighted Wisconsin's resume is not all that impressive. It's kind of Jim Tressilian, if you will, as far as just winning the game, but certainly not, you know, necessarily an impressive fact in fashion. I think what Northwestern might be their you know, signature win of the year when you think about ranked teams, or at least Northwestern was ranked. I know they beat Michigan, but, you know, I'm really struggling with it. I've honestly only seen Wisconsin probably play 3 full games this year, so not a ton, but I see this as a total toss-up. If JT is healthy, and, you know, like looks healthy, then I think Ohio State's got a good shot, but I could definitely see this being, a game that comes down to the last possession. Which may not help their playoff chances if they're going to be splitting hairs with someone like Bama if they don't win convincingly.
That's exactly right, and that's going to be the next part of my question for you as we talk about the playoff chances. But Jim Cushion's got one for you first. Jimmy,
and in thinking, since we're on the subject right now of this matchup of Wisconsin, what do you think Ohio State's biggest advantage in this particular matchup would be?
Oh, biggest advantage. Well, man, that's a good question. I'm not sure, you know, Michigan's defensive line is, you know, the rush defense, I think, might even be number one in the country. But considering who they've played, I do think Ohio State is going to be able to run the ball. I don't know if I think that's the biggest advantage or not, but I do think Ohio State is going to be able to match Wisconsin, you know, kind of pound for pound up front and be able to run the football.
All right, so let's kind of play what if scenarios here to try to figure out if Ohio State has any place in this Final Four. The more I think about the conference championship games, I am finding it almost impossible for the committee to justify the Buckeyes' participation. And here's an example of what I mean. If Auburn wins the SEC championship game, they are in, Georgia is out, and Alabama, with one loss, has a case. ACC, if Clemson beats Miami, which I believe they will, Miami is already out. Well, not already. Miami would be out because it would be their second loss. Clemson is in. If Oklahoma beats TCU, which they should, they would be in. So in that scenario, it would come down to Ohio State if they were to beat Wisconsin and Alabama. Alabama has one loss. It was to the sixth-ranked team in the country on the road in their rivalry game last week. Buckeyes have two losses, one early, a 15-point loss at home to Oklahoma, one late, a 31-point loss at unranked Iowa. Is there any way in that scenario, in your mind, Chris Lauterbach, that the committee says, yeah, Buckeyes?
I think there's a way. I think that every point, you know, everything you stated there is obviously valid. I think if you're arguing for Ohio State, you kind of made the case for Bama there. If you're arguing for Ohio State, yeah, you got two losses. One of them is terrible. The other one isn't very good either, quite frankly, but at least it occurred, you know, in September. Ohio State also at this point would have wins over Penn State, Michigan State, and Wisconsin, which you could argue that certainly Penn State and Wisconsin, those two wins would both be better than anything on Bama's resume, considering their biggest wins are against 3-loss LSU and 4-loss Mississippi State. They would also have a conference championship, right? So Ohio State would have a conference championship and two better wins than anything Bama has. But then obviously they have the warts of two losses, one being a terrible loss versus Bama only having the one loss to Auburn, basically. So, I'm not sure I think they would get in. I'm not sure. I guess I would say this. I think Bama would fare better in the playoffs than Ohio State would. I certainly think that is where my head is at, but it's hard to get in the mind of what the committee would do. I think there's a case on both sides there. If it's a tiebreaker, my tiebreaker would go to Bama just because of eye test. I feel like if I was on the committee, Alabama has a better chance to be competitive in the playoff than Ohio State.
What if it were to come down to two-loss Clemson against two-loss Ohio State. Let's suppose for a second that Miami, which has only one loss, and yeah, it was this past week, and it's a bad time and all, but it's only one loss. If they win the ACC championship and have just the one loss, and they beat number one Clemson at the in the process here in their ACC championship game, Miami is in. And the question now becomes, what becomes of Clemson? Their two losses versus Ohio State's two losses.
I think when we're splitting hairs this much on these teams, it might be just on the outside looking in. This seems like that because of that, this would be a pretty difficult year to put in two teams from the same conference. I think it might be easier for the committee to just go with, you know, go with conference championship there. If they
needed to. Okay, so you make a very good point there, and I don't mean to cut you off, but I am short on time, so I'm going to ask the last question here. If we are talking about conference champions then, and staying away from two teams from one conference, how does the committee completely omit USC from their considerations? They've been down there around the 9, 10, 11 range in all of these rankings. They're a two-loss team just like the Bucks. They have played, according to what I heard on ESPN, the 16th toughest schedule in the country compared to the 49th toughest for the Buckeyes. And if they beat if they beat Stanford, another ranked team in the Pac-12 championship game, they're 11-2. They've got a lot of ranked team victories. And like I said, they played a tougher schedule than Ohio State. What about USC's claim for a spot in that Final Four?
Yeah, no, I think that's an interesting argument. A lot of people aren't talking about USC. I guess I don't know.
Especially the committee. They're not talking about them.
Yeah, well, and that would have given them two wins over Stanford, right? Because I think they beat them earlier in the year. And then, but what they have is the same thing Ohio State has, which is a terrible loss, right? Because, you know, Notre Dame who got ran by Miami, you know, Notre Dame destroyed USC. So I don't know. You'd have to take that into account. And honestly, I know the committee isn't supposed to, but Ohio State fans travel, and Ohio State in general turns on a lot more TV sets than USC ever will. So they won't say that's a factor, but if it came down to Ohio State and USC, you could easily justify Ohio State, and college football would get the benefit, or the NCAA and all the advertisers and whatever would certainly get a bonus if it was Ohio State instead of USC.
My only problem, and I hope it's not about ratings, I hope it's not about television, because you're right about everything you just said. It just would destroy the competitiveness of all of this, because this is supposed to be about achievement, et cetera. The two losses you referenced, one for USC was a three-point field goal loss to 16th-ranked Washington State in Week 5. And then the Notre Dame game, you're right, it was a 35-point blowout loss, but it was on the road at Notre Dame, and Notre Dame was ranked 13th. Compare that to a 31-point loss on the road at an unranked Iowa. I mean, are we really going to say that the blowout loss to Notre Dame is a bigger wart than the blowout loss to Iowa by the Bucks? That's something I think the committee would have a hard time justifying, too. So I just feel like there are a lot of different things that can happen here, and I just feel like if they force Ohio State into this thing, there might be a big pushback by a lot of conferences and a lot of people around the country that it just looks rigged for the Big Ten and for specifically for Urban and the Buckeyes.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair, and nobody has a worse loss than Iowa. Nobody convinced that's inarguable, right?
Yeah,
I mean, that's the worst loss of the college football season by any team that thinks they're a contender. So
yeah, that's the key. That's the key, because it was an unranked team, a 31, and they were never even competitive. If you lose by a huge amount to a ranked team, particularly a top 10 or 15 team, well, we'll talk. But you do that to an unranked team that then, by the way, 2 weeks later lost to Purdue. That just kind of lets you know how bad it really was. Chris Lauterbach, 11warriors.com. Read and follow his work there. It's a great Buckeye website. Check it out for yourself. Chris, thanks for the time, bud.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Talking NFL with Scott Petrak coming up next.
Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Good college football conversation with Chris Lauterbach. Time to turn our attention to the NFL on this Monday afternoon. Our good friend Scott Petrak joins us fresh from the beat. Of covering the Cleveland Browns. Hey, Scotty, how are you? Scott, can you hear me?
Hey, yeah, how's it going, man?
There he is, got him now. Good, Scott. Hey, thanks for your time and thanks for your patience, by the way. We're a little late coming to you. So we got to pack a lot into the next about 13 minutes that we have to talk to one another, Scott. I want to start with what made me tweet yesterday, I hate the National Football League. This isn't going to be my... what has become all too familiar rants about how horrible the Browns are, 4-44 in the last 48 games and all that garbage. But I just cannot stand what they're doing to the game when they can call that flag on Jabril Peppers in the fourth quarter. The receiver, what was his name, Morgan, caught it.
I think it was Josh Malone, I think.
Malone, not Morgan, Malone. You're right, correct. Thank you, Scotty. Two steps, caught it and took two. He was running with the football when here comes Jabril Peppers doing a Ronnie Lott to him, and that's all it was. It was a shoulder hit to the chest, and he knocked him down and knocked him almost out. He knocked the ball away. He did everything a tackler is supposed to do in that play. And when I heard that official say personal foul, contacting a defenseless receiver, I said, that's it, I'm done. What does that mean? You're not allowed to make contact? And in what way was he defenseless, Scott? I watched it. I can't tell you how many times. In what way is he defenseless having caught a pass and is running down the sideline trying to score a touchdown?
Yeah, I mean, I get your frustration, Bob, and I think a lot of fans share it. There's so many layers to this, and I think you can start with the defenseless part. Right. Now, if you took that word out of the rule and just said you're not allowed to hit, you know, not allowed to hit a player in the open field in the head or neck area, that would clear up some confusion. I'm not saying that's the right rule, but it would clear up confusion on the rule, because that's what it felt like it boiled down to me yesterday, is that, to me, there's no doubt that Pepper's helmet hit the chin of the receiver. You can argue that the guy's running and it's a football play, and then I get that argument. To me, it felt closer to that. I didn't think he obviously had not put the ball away. I think he was still trying to complete the catch. And in the NFL's eyes, that's what defenseless receiver means. And if you follow the rule, and I looked up, you know, we looked up the rule, it's clearly a penalty. So I think the argument is with the rule rather than kind of the application of the rule.
I'm going to have a problem with both the rule and the application of the rule here, too, because while there's no doubt that his helmet did impact the chin or face mask of the receiver, that wasn't the primary contact. It was my understanding that no helmet-to-helmet hits meant leading with the helmet, your helmet smashing into somebody else's helmet. That would be the definition of a helmet-to-helmet contact rule where it's a clear violation. The first contact was made with the shoulder to the chest, the shoulder and forearm to the chest. And, Scotty, I mean, this is just human physiology. We can't separate our head from our shoulders. If you lower the shoulder and hit in a place where you're allowed to hit, which is the torso and the chest, which he did, your head comes with it. And if it makes ancillary, and that's the key here, not primary, but ancillary contact with the other guy's face mask or even helmet, that to me is, that's football. And if you take that away, you are literally taking away football. You are saying we can't hit anymore. We can only either grab around the waist and throw down or dive at people's knees and cause ACL tears and Achilles tears and broken femurs or tibias and fibulas and all that other crap. Because that's the only way you're allowed to hit them. Because what Jabril Peppers did, in my estimation, was every bit the textbook football hit that we have taught kids forever. Just don't lead with your head, and he didn't. He led with his shoulder. The head made ancillary, not primary contact, Scott.
Yeah, plenty of the people in the Browns locker room would agree with you. The rule clearly states that it doesn't have to be primary. It says even incidental, even if you lead with a different part, your helmet can't then contact the player's neck and head area. And, you know, the reasons are obvious. It's a player safety concussion issue. And they've tried to take those types of hits out of the game. And I understand if you don't think those
hits... Before you say the rules are, the reason is obvious and say that, include money. And the fact is that the class action lawsuit against the league is going to cost them billions, well, sure, probably. And that's what this is about. They want to be able to say, look what we've done. We have taken all the hitting out of the game to make sure that heads and necks are protected. So, therefore, you know, they're going to try to convince a jury that it's not our fault.
Yeah, I mean, that's obviously part of it. I think, you know, I think that Roger Goodell does not like to see his players get concussions and doesn't like the CTE studies and that correlation. But for this specific play, I will say that if he aims a foot lower, he's not taking out a knee. He's hitting the guy in the stomach. And while that strike zone may be awfully small,
yeah,
it's still a strike zone. Jabril Peppers admitted that he can do that. It's his mistake for aiming higher. He could have aimed lower. He said, I had plenty of time to aim lower, and I didn't do it. So you know, I get all the frustration and the angst, and I think it's somewhat justified. But I would also say we see way fewer of these hits than we did 5-10 years ago, and that's because of the penalty. And if you can take them out, take these kind of hits out of the game to X degree, then you can take them out to Y degree. And for me, it doesn't, I haven't noticed a change in my enjoyment of football because I don't see a guy get lit up on the sideline. I think hitting.
You just nailed it. I think that's a very, very big key. I have lost enjoyment for the game. I don't want to see the Jack Tatum, Daryl Stingley. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to see the NFL jacked up videos come back. Don't get me wrong. I'm talking about a play like yesterday. I'm talking about where it wasn't a head hunt. It wasn't a helmet to helmet, like I said, a primary hit. It was a guy just, there's a guy who just caught the ball over my cornerback. I'm the safety, and I've got to run from Cleveland to Cincinnati to get there because my coordinator has me playing 30 yards off the gosh blasted ball. But when I get there, my job is to separate him from the ball. And that's football. And when that flag comes out and he's told you can't play that way, that sucks a lot of the enjoyment. For me anyway, Scotty, and a lot of old school, and you're more of an old school guy too. Oh, mind you, I said old school.
I'm older.
but you know what I mean? I just find that so weak. It is so it's counterintuitive to the game where it's a contact game, and one of the ways that you play defense for the history of this game, and I'm not talking about knocking guys into concussion, Scott, but one of the ways you do that is you make sure that guy has gator arms the next time he comes down the field and reaches for one of those. I've got to put a big hit on him and knock him flat on his back. And it's an intimidation. It's a part of the game. It's kind of like it's also illegal to drill a guy in the face with a fastball, but you throw chin music sometimes to make sure that guy has, he's about to step in that bucket. That's a big part of the game that I just feel like is changing the game, and in my mind, wrecking the game by removing it.
Right. I think it's safe to say that it's changing the game. You see fewer of those. That's why you see the passing numbers have gone up for, decades or whatever.
Right. Artificial.
The rules are,
exactly,
yeah, the
right.
Rules. You know, and you can't do anything. You can't hold them. And I get that. So you have to adjust the way you watch the game. And if you don't want to do, not you personally, but if people don't want to do that, that I get that. And that's fine. To me, it hasn't reached that level. I understand it's hard to play defensive back in this league. I understand that everything goes to the offense, and that type of play, hurts the defense, and it's tough to play defense. So I get all that. I also think that this was kind of the perfect storm of events. Is Jabril Peppers finally making a play, right? We haven't seen him make a play pretty much all season. He finally makes one, and it's a flag. It's in the fourth quarter when the Browns are within one score. If this is a first quarter penalty, I don't think we care. And that's the nature of the beast. And if it wasn't against your team, then you probably don't care either. But I will add this. I was, I'm in the press box, and I'm right over when it happened.
Right.
And obviously you get a million angles on TV. But bang, bang, live, I had no doubt it was a penalty. And that's because I've been trained when it's a big hit and it looks like it's high, you expect to see a flag.
See, that's exactly it. And the high part, to me, notwithstanding, because to me, I just cannot stand that phrase, head and neck area. When he puts a shoulder into somebody's chest, to me, that's not, quote, neck area, and it's certainly not head area. And what the heck is neck area anyway? Because now that means, technically, Scotty, if I hit somebody shoulder pad, I have hit his neck area. Because I don't know. Reach up right now and feel your neck, and guess what? It's connected right to. It's your shoulder. I'm doing it right now. That's my neck area.
I hear you.
That's what's so doggone stupid about the rule and the wording and everything else. And all right, let me move on. Tell me about DeShone Kizer. One of his better games of the year. I still feel terrible for this kid from Toledo for being given the raw deal he's been given, forced to play a season with the worst roster, maybe in franchise history, certainly the worst in the NFL this year. Terrible receiving corps, injured offensive line, and yet finding ways to make progress. I thought that's what he did yesterday, has made progress.
Without a doubt. Without it, I think you can say that two of his last three games, he's played his best game. I thought he played his best game in Detroit and his best game yesterday in Cincinnati. He had a clunker in the middle against a really good Jacksonville defense.
Yeah.
So there is progress there. And I'm working on a story right now. You know, we've seen him be bad. I think we've seen him get better. Now can he take that next step to good? And it's possible because Josh Gordon's coming back, you know. And now you give him a legitimate NFL receiver, and you pair him with Corey Coleman, who had a big drop yesterday, but belongs in this league and can make plays and made a couple plays yesterday. And now he's got options. Now the defense can't try to stop the run. And it should open up everything. Now this is assuming Josh makes it to Sunday and assuming he's healthy and as effective as I think he'll be. I think you'll get a much better and fair evaluation of the Deshaun Tigers.
Scott, what do you make of Jimmy Haslam and Hugh Jackson playing kissy face with A.J. McCarron after the game? What do you think? What kind of message does that send to Deshaun Kelly?
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, to me, it's not a great look. I think it's interesting. You know, Hugh tried to downplay it, but he did admit, you know, I was trying to put a face to a name for Jimmy Haslam. And we don't know how anything's going to play out after the season. But if Hugh Jackson's here next year, it would not be a surprise at all if A.J. McCarron's here, or at least the Browns make a run at A.J. McCarron. He's going to be some type of free agent. And I can envision a scenario where they add a veteran to Deshaun Kizer. They don't necessarily draft a guy at the top of the draft. They add a veteran, whether that's A.J. McCarron, whether it's Alex Smith, Case Keenum, some type of guy where you're not closing the door on Deshaun Kizer, but you're adding competition and adding that vet presence, which frankly could have been would have been helpful this year.
Scotty, we got shortchanged on our time with you today. Sorry about that. I want to get you back on the air soon so we can talk about this stuff in a lot more depth. Really appreciate it. Everybody, make sure you go to BrownsZone.com, BrownsZone.com. That is Scott Petrak's Browns update page. It is just filled with all kinds of stats, analysis, information, and everything you need. BrownsZone.com. Scotty, thank you, my friend.
Thanks, Bob.
You got it. The music is playing. You know what that means. Drive Time is coming on next. Stay where you are. Mike Miller on the way. Right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We'll see you tomorrow.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.